This is Serenade Radio with the best in easy listening. Now here's Mark Stein with Stein's Song of the Week.
Before digital downloads, before CDs, there were LPs with labels in the centre of the record. And that's how I got interested in songwriters, because in small print, in parentheses, their names would be on the label. And even as a child, I was aware that some of those names were rather well known, Cole Porter, Rodgers and Hart, but that most of them weren't. For example, I have an old Frank Sinatra single. You know who he is, but do you know who, let me check the label, Newell and Ortolani are?
Let's forget about tomorrow. Let's forget about tomorrow. Let's forget about tomorrow, for tomorrow never comes. No money. Forget the money.
Well, I pretty soon forgot. Forget Damani. It was the big theme song from the Yellow Rolls-Royce and almost entirely forgotten film. But for some reason, the credits, Newell and Ortolani, stuck, and shortly thereafter I noticed them on another Sinatra track.
More than the greatest love the world has known, this is the love I give to you alone. More than the simple words I try to say, I only live to love you more each day. More than you'll ever know, my arms long to hold you so. My life will be in your keeping, waking, sleeping, laughing, weeping. Longer than always is a long, long time, but far beyond forever, you're gonna be mine. I know I never lived before, and my heart is very sure, no one else could love you more.
Sinatra with the Count Basie Band, arranged by Quincy Jones. Does it get any more American than that? In fact, the song is entirely un-American. It's by an Italian composer, Ritz Ortolani, and an English lyricist, Norman Newell. Songwriting was not all Norman Newell did. He was a big part of the British music business for half a century. As an executive at EMI, as a shrewd signer of young talent, as a producer of West End cast albums and big hit singles.
I don't care what they say, I won't stay in a world without love.
Peter and Gordon singing Lennon and McCartney.
I don't care what they say, I won't stay in a world without love.
Produced by Norman Newell. To help me conjure the world of Norman Newell, we have Gary Osborne, who served as head honcho of BASCA, the British Academy of Songwriters, Composers and Authors, and of the SODS, the Society of Distinguished Songwriters, and he's one of Norman's fellow British lyricists. Gary wrote Kiki Dee's big hit Amoureuse and Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds, and he was Elton John's songwriting partner on Blue Eyes and Part-Time Love. But his relationship with Norman goes back way before any of that.
I would say that, among other things, the work that he gave my dad paid for my swanky education in Switzerland. So I guess I've got much to thank him for, apart from the wonderful work he did.
Yeah, when you say that, your dad was a musician and Norman Newell was producing albums at EMI at the time.
Yeah, Norman was a staff producer at EMI and my dad was a staff arranger there. I don't know that the staff thing was formal, but he was signed as an artist there. He did many instrumental albums and had some moderately successful singles as well, and many of them were produced by Norman. you know, lush, light orchestral kind of stuff. But also, Norman produced all these acts, people like Shirley Bassey and Matt Monro and Petula Clark for a while, Beverly Sisters, Ken Dodd, even Pinky and Perky produced at one stage. My dad did the orchestrations for that too, as did Alan Ainsworth and Jeff Love. And Norman's three favourite arrangers, his go-to guys when he was making a record with whatever artist it was one of those three guys. In addition to that, Norman lived around the corner from us. So we knew him very well socially. He would come out, if my mum had parties, of course, she would be inviting Norman Newell because Norman Newell was providing a lot of dad's employment. So Norman was a very popular man in our house and a lovely man, and a lovely man too.
Yeah, when you say that, it's a particular moment in the British music business because he had to be, I guess, a kind of jack of all trade and turn your hand to a bit of everything when you were at a company like EMI.
Indeed. And he had to keep kind of quiet about the songwriting. I mean, he did one of his biggest songs under pseudonym because the high-up guy, Sir Joseph Lockwood, might take a dim view of him kind of moonlighting in that way. But of course, his songwriting talent enhanced his A&R in talent.
I love you, hate you, love you, hate you, but I want you till the world stops turning. For whatever you do, I never, never, never want to be in love with anyone but you.
He wasn't the kind of a producer that we have now. It was more A&R. It was choosing the song, it was choosing the act, it was going in, it was hearing, it's all a little more of a strings, darling. He was very camp, just a super, super fellow.
Now, the reason you are a songwriter is, in fact, because of Norman Newell, because of something you witnessed at one of your parents' parties when you were barely out of short trousers.
You see, not only did we live near him in London, but we also had a seaside flat in Rustington. And in the same block, he had a flat as well. And so did the great songwriter and conductor, Cyril Ornadell, who was the conductor for Sunday Night at the London Palladium, among other things. And of course, wrote Pickwick, which contained If I Ruled the World, and many other great songs. Mm. And so he had a flat in the building. We had a flat in the building. And Norman had a flat in the building. We're having a party. I am now at this stage, maybe 8 or 9. Very nice party. Everyone's there. All the, I mean, you know, Russ Conway would be there and Eve Boswell and half the Beverly Sisters. Mind you, half the Beverly Sisters, that's just 1.5 people. Norman said to me, well, I'll see you a little bit later, Gary. He was always very nice to me as a kid. He would always have a little chat. And he said, I'm just off for an hour or two. I'm going to go visit Uncle Cyril. That's Cyril Ornadell in the flat downstairs. We've got to write a song. I've just got to go down there and write a song. I need a song. I think it was for Matt Monro. So he went and he wrote the song and came back about an hour later, and I didn't think much of it until 3 months later when this song was in the top 3 in the charts.
There could never be a portrait of my love, for nobody could paint a dream you will never see, a portrait of my love, for miracles I'm never seen. Anyone who sees her soon forgets the Mona Lisa. It would take, I know, a Michelangelo, and he would need the glow of dawn that paints the sky above, to try and paint a portrait of my love.
And my father said to me, "You know that song? That beautiful song? That's the song Norman wrote that day when we had the party."
It would take, I know, a Michelangelo, and he would need the glow of dawn that paints the sky above to try and paint a portrait of my love.
And it was like a bell went off over my head. I thought, wow, he was only gone about an hour. I said, "Dad, is he making much money out of this?" He said, "Oh, he's making buckets of money." You know, in those days, you could make loads of money out of a hit single. And that was the very minute I thought, well, he was gone an hour. And that's what I want to do. I want to do 1 hour's work and 23 hours of not working and get paid well for it. Seems like that's the job for me. As innocent as I was, I hadn't worked out whether I could actually do it or not. Yes. I just said, that's what I want to do. What was lovely was I was very lucky that not only did I know him when I was a lad and he was a man, but I knew Norman when I was a grown man and he was extremely elderly. And Norman was always terrifically proud, because this was a point where I was having hits with Elton and the War of the Worlds and stuff. And so he was very proud when I told the story of that I became a songwriter because of him. He loved it.
But I like the way you put it, basically. Oh, well, you just duck out of the party for half an hour and you've done your work. And then you come back to the cocktail sausages and the vino. And what a great way to live.
Yeah. I mean, of course, real life isn't quite like that. But I was a kid. What did I know?
Anyone who sees her
soon forgets the Mona Lisa. It's a strange rhyme. And you must have sat there, how do I get the Mona Lisa into this song?
Yeah,
and also, when you've got a tiny little short bridge, I suspect that coming up with that probably took most of the time that that hour was spent on, that famous hour down at Rustington.
Well, that's what I find so striking about your recollection of it, because you know, at some point, if you're writing a song called Portrait of My Love, you're going to have to mention a painter or a painting or something
specific. Picasso, bad rhyme. Yeah. Picasso, not so good, the rhymes with Picasso.
Yeah. And it's not a rhyme that's in a rhyming dictionary. You can't buy a 10-quid rhyming dictionary and say Mona Lisa, anyone who sees her. It won't be in there.
Forgets the Mona Lisa. It would take, I know, a Michelangelo, and he would need the glow of dawn that paints the sky above.
Vera Lynn with Tony Osborne, Gary Osborne's dad, arranging and conducting. And you notice they didn't get Norman Newell in to feminize that lyric for Dame Vera. So she sings, anyone who sees her soon forgets the Mona Lisa. Because what are you going to do? Anyone who sees him soon forgets the Louvre Museum. So Norman lost out on a lot of the distaff vocalists, but he did get recordings by Steve Lawrence, Perry Como, Johnny Mathis. And if you think, hey, it can't get better than that, well, it did. In 1962, there was an Italian film that year, not Fellini, not Gina Lollobrigida, but a pseudo art house documentary of cleverly ordered clips of New Guinea man-eaters, in both senses of the word, Malay fishermen feeding toxic sea urchins to sharks, Chinese restaurateurs skinning alive dogs for their most valued customers. Hence the name, Mondo Carne, A Dog's World. Not to everyone's taste, the dog or the film, but the composer, Ritz Ortolani, had a theme, and they thought the theme could have a life beyond the film. So Marcello Ciorciolini put an Italian lyric to it. Ti guarderi nel cuore, look into your heart. And Mrs. Ortolani, Catina Ranieri, made a record.
Se tu mi guardi in fondo al cuore, vedrai un nome scritto con le nuvole che ombre disegnano di favola con la magia di un incantesimo. Quel nome leggerai, una voce sentirai, la mia voce che ti dice t'amo, 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 sulle parole che si spengono.
I don't like to complain, but the title of the song, Ti guarderi nel cuore, doesn't actually appear anywhere in the lyric, and Marcello Ciorciolini throws away Signor Ortolani's marvellous middle section by just repeating t'amo, t'amo, t'amo. So the Italian song didn't do much, and then someone said, you know what we need? An English lyric.
My minor connection with that is that Norman, when he had to write a lyric, usually he sat down with the writer. The writer would play the song over and over. And when he was given more to write, he was given sheet music. Well, he didn't read music, but Tony Osborne, my dad, lived round the corner. So he phoned Dad up and said, look, I've got this song I've got to write. I've got to deliver it tomorrow, but I don't know how it goes. Can I come out? Can you play it to me? Yeah. So he brought it round to my dad's office And he sat with the pad and Dad played it. And he played it again. And he played it again. And he played it over and over for an hour or two. A little break. We'd go and have a cup of tea, and then Norman would say, could you, one more time? Dad would have a cigarette, and then he'd say, Tony, can you just play the middle section again? Can you just play the middle section again? Sorry, that song came to existence in my dad's office, in our flat, with Dad sitting at the piano and me running around. I guess I was about 12 or 13. And I knew I would have said, hello, Norman, pop in and say, anyone want a cup of tea? And he left a couple of hours later and he'd written that song.
More than the greatest love the world has known, this is the love I'll give to you alone. More than the simple words I try to say, I only live to love you more each day. More than you'll ever know, my arms long to hold you so. My life will be in your keeping, waking, sleeping, laughing, weeping. Longer than always is a long, long time. But far beyond forever, you'll be mine. I know I never lived before, and my heart is very sure, no one else could love you more.
And that song has been recorded, among others, by Matt Monro, Johnny Mathis, Andy Williams, Nat King Cole, Glenn Campbell, Vic Damone, Bobby Darin, Shirley Bassey, Brenda Lee, Tom Jones, Jack Jones.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. Alma Cogan, Doris Day, Judy Garland, Nancy Wilson, Connie Francis. Now, I would take any one of those acts and consider myself lucky to have had a cover by any one of those acts. But I didn't mention all of them. The Rascals. The Rascals who did Groove It. And
longer than always is a long, long time. But far beyond forever, you'll be mine. I know I never lived before, and my heart is very sure, no one else could love more.
Booker T and the MGs, the Supremes,
right.
Amanda Lear, Roy Orbison recorded more. And of course, the great version that you played a little earlier on, with Q doing the arrangement for the Basie band behind Sinatra.
More than you'll ever know, my arms, they long to hold you so. My life will be in your keeping, waking, sleeping, laughing, and weeping. Longer than always is a long, long time. But far beyond forever, you'll be mine. I know I never lived before, and my heart is very sure, no one else could love you more. No one else could love you more.
I Googled it today, and they say that that lyric was an Italian song and that he adapted the lyric. He didn't adapt it. He wrote a damn brand new lyric. It's a perfect example of lyric writing. He uses the word more in any way he can and then ends it. I know I've never loved before. My heart is very sure no one else could love you more. He ends with the title. He was a consummate professional. And also, it's got that fantastic triple rhyme in it. More than you'll ever know, my arms long to hold you so. My life will be in your keeping, waking, sleeping, laughing, weeping. I should imagine, and I was around, that he hugged himself when he got that. I would have congratulated, I would have done a lap of the room. You know, when you're trying to write something and you get something that is that perfect. They're not false rhymes, they're perfect rhymes, they're not shoehorned in. It's beautiful.
More than you'll ever know, my arms long to hold you so. My life will be in your keeping, waking, sleeping, laughing, weeping.
Waking, sleeping, laughing, weeping. It hugs the tune. You can stick words on notes, but that hugs the tune and binds them together so they can't be pried apart.
Well, that hugging the tune thing, that is a wonderful Mark Stein expression that I've heard you use before, and I love it. And I might start using it myself, but crediting myself with it. The clever part of that is that he sets it up by saying, my life will be in your keeping.
Keeping is kind of an unusual word for a song.
It's a little old-fashioned. I bet you that that was a phrase that would have resonated. Remember, Norman was quite old when he died, and he was no spring chicken when he wrote that. It may have been a phrase more common in his parents' day and not as unusual as we find it to be now.
More than you'll ever know, my arms long to hold you so. My life will be in your giving, waking, sleeping, laughing, weeping. Longer than always is a long, long time. But far beyond forever, you're gonna be mine.
A song from Me to You, a super enthused Steve Lawrence with a killer Billy May arrangement. Music by Ritz Ortolani, English lyric by Norman Newell. An ever so slight blemish with that impure rhyme, a long, long time, you'll be mine. But it hasn't stopped that song growing and growing year by year to become a major standard. More isn't a bad summation of Norman Newell's life in music. He had more. He had, on the one hand, Frank Sinatra and Dinah Shore and Johnny Mathis, and on the other, Pinky and Perky, Norman Wisdom and Joyce Grenfell.
I think probably his finest achievement was Narcissus. I don't know if you have time to play that on your show.
Right,
but that is the great track with Norman Wisdom and Joyce Grenfell. Simply laughed through the lyrics. I asked Norman about this. He was recording Norman Wisdom, and Joyce Grenfell kind of walked past. Oh, she called out, oh, hello, Norman, nice to see you. He said, oh, come in for a second. Oh, why don't you sing on this? Well, I don't know the words. He said, well, look. And apparently one take, they started to laugh.
You know what this reminds me of, don't you?
What? Oh, yes. Ruining the music, this is.
Oh, please.
You'll go all bang in a minute.
Just for Gary Osborne. And now you know, if anyone ever asks you the connection between Joyce Grenfell and Aretha Franklin, it's Norman Newell.
No. Stein's Song of the Week was presented by Mark Stein and produced for Serenade Radio by Brian Savin.